You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to this live Locked On Cavs reaction to the Cleveland Cavaliers picking Ochai Agbaji out of Kansas with the 14th overall pick. As always, I'm your host, one of your hosts, Chris Manning from Diamond Up Rocks and Estimations for the Sword. Evan Damrell from Facebook's Right to Nuclear here is with me. This is going to be the first 10 or so minutes of the show on Friday, but we're going to go live for the next 10 to 15 talking about Agbaji. Evan, what is your initial reaction to Cleveland going with Agbaji? The Final Four's most outstanding player last year, a four-year college player out of Kansas, 6'5 guard out of Kansas. What do you think?
I mean, I think I can understand why some fans are disappointed, especially with AJ Griffin on the board, but I think Agbaji was just one of the safer overall picks. And if you're a team like Cleveland, you need to grab guys that can play defense, provide athleticism and shooting. And Agbaji checks a lot of those boxes, and I think you also have the luxury of him being one of the more NBA-ready prospects, so you can kind of throw him out there right away and have him be your backup 2-3, maybe start him at the 2 at times if he fits nicely next to Garland. There are some concerns about his handle and just overall just dribbling mechanics in general. Excited to hear about the training camp and just camp battles between Okoro and Agbaji on defense. But other than that, I think that if I had to give this pick a grade, I'd give it a B-. I think it's a guy the Cavs have been interested in from the beginning. And it makes a lot of sense for them, but I want to hear your thoughts on it too, because I think he checks a lot of boxes, but I'm also not in an NBA front office for a reason, so I need to see it on the floor as well before I really get my full thoughts.
Yeah, look, I think this pick makes a lot of sense. I think the best way to kind of look at it is say that it is very understandable. It makes a lot of sense from a needs perspective, from all of that. It's also just a pick that I can understand if you look at it and say it's boring. But I don't think boring is necessarily bad. Obviously, they went with him, you know, over Malachi Branham, who just got right now picked by the Spurs at 20. You know, there's other guys like Jalen Williams from Santa Clara went up before this. Usman Dieng or Jiang went before him before this as well, right? Like, they went with Agbaji as some of maybe their other options go off the board. And then AJ Griffin is there. And I think, you know, this would scream that maybe his medicals are a little problematic. And you're wondering if you're going to get something out of him. Agbaji is just like a very safe, clean pick. I'm not going to say that like he has the upside of some of the other options they could have gotten with, because I don't believe he does. But I look at him and look as a guy that can shoot, can handle, at least like in like a very small way, can defend. I think this just makes sense. And I feel like this is a JB Bickerstaff player.
That's another big thing is like, this is a dude who busts his butt on defense. Like, this is a very much a JB Bickerstaff player.
And I think you just, Evan, look at the Cavs roster and it's like, there's just such a glaring hole at wing. This guy just like feels like a wing that makes sense for what this team needs and what they're going to need with Garland, Mobley now and going forward. I think B is probably a good, fair initial grade, B minus. I get, but I like this pick just like makes sense to me.
I would like to say that friend of the program, Trevor Magnotti, did point out that in certain lineups, if you want to go with bench unit, really have Agbaji be a point of attack defender. Maybe you play him with Isaac Okoro as well to really wreak havoc on the perimeter. And then it also just kind of relieves a lot of pressure to Darius Garland will face on the defensive side of the ball, especially if you maybe want to rest Jared Allen and play Evan Mobley at the five a little bit more next season. Like, I think this could be the potential to be a quote-unquote connector piece, as you would put it. But again, need to see this in an actual NBA setting. But I think the fact that the three-point shooting percentage, like, that's real. I think him just being such a solid overall player, like, that's real. Like, I think the Cavs have a solid piece. And again, we talked about Brandon. We mentioned AJ Griffin. I can understand maybe the disappointment of not swinging for the fences. But when Usman Dieng and Jalen Williams are off the board, who I think maybe the Cavs might have had higher, it makes a lot of sense why maybe Cleveland goes for this. I think they had a lot of trade offers for 14 as well, but sticking with Agbaji is always the right call. This is, again, credit to us too. We've been banging on this drum since the very beginning when Cleveland was going to have a first-round pick, but this is it's solid. Like, again, I want to see it in execution. I want to see how he's utilized by the Cavs overall, but this rounds out your rotation. and also maybe mitigates the need of like playing Lamar Stevens or Dean Wade or guys of that ilk. No disrespect to those guys, but guys of that ilk, heavy minutes in your rotation, you can actually add quality depth on the perimeter.
Yeah, people are just joining us. This is the Locked On Cavs live reaction to the first 10 or so minutes of the Friday podcast. Chris Manning, that's Evan Damerel. So Ochai Agbaji, again, is the pick at number 14 overall, 22-year-old wing, 6'5", 215 pounds, a 6'10 wingspan. I think, Evan, that when I look at this, I think specifically if we want to look at this as like not taking AJ Griffin, who I think obviously a higher ceiling as a prospect, but the injury concerns, not taking Branham. It just seems like they have pretty much identified like a pretty – we've hit on this, but like this feels like they just like – we're like, you know what, like – we need this very specific thing. We maybe like some of these other guys, but this guy just like makes a ton of sense for us. And like, we kind of just can maybe play the development game in other areas. I can understand that. I think if maybe like, if you want to say like that you got to swing at 14 here, I can get that. But maybe this speaks to that. They didn't have as much belief in Branham's upside. Maybe in him not getting to work out with the Cavs, you know, played a part in this. And, you know, maybe it tells you that, like, again, I think this kind of raises a red flag about the medicals for AJ Griffin, who I kind of thought made a lot of sense if they were going to stick with this. So, yeah, I think that's where
we're at. I think the medicals with AJ Griffin is really why he slid in the first place. I think him ending up in Atlanta is not a bad spot for him either. But there can be legitimate concerns, especially if maybe this is a rookie you want to lean on, not heavily, but lean on a little bit more so than you maybe would with a rookie at 14, where you can say, okay, yes, AJ Griffin can provide a shooting, defense, and also upside, and he's a freshman, but his knees are very bad. Like, that's a very huge concern of his. Like, yeah, he was okay at times at Duke this year, but, like, this is a problem that followed him back to high school, and, like, at the next level, that's an obvious concern, too. Again, I maybe understand the disappointment with that, but I can't really complain much about this Agbaji pick. Like, people might, like, cite analytics as a reason when it comes to, like, Okoro and Agbaji, but, like, the Cavs have a certain style. They like to grind things out defensively, but we talked about this the other day. They can continue that mantra and belief and mentality, but also maybe make it a little easier on themselves offensively. And adding spacing through Agbaji does make things easier for them offensively. If you look at Mobley, Allen, Sexton, Okoro, you add another shooter to this roster in theory. Again, need to see it on the floor in actual NBA action, but it's a promising sign, and maybe how they're going. Also, we're recording this live, so we don't know what happened to the other second round picks, but if they had three more rookies to the rotation, that'll also be fascinating. But or not rotation, but just draft three more rookies in general. But Agbaji's a good way to start, and maybe they start going for the upside plays depending on who falls in the second round, because like Christian Braun was picked late in the first, so like, and he was like considered a second round prospect, so there could be a lot of fluidity, a lot of movement. The Cavs could maybe grab a guy that they could stash, and having three cracks in the second round could definitely happen or help with that.
Look I think this pick is just solid, and I think like if you're looking at 14, you're looking at trying to get value out of 14. I think that makes sense. And Matt, I want to end on this. I believe this is friend of the program, Mac Robinson.
I believe so, too. It looks like Mac taking a selfie in that pick.
It does. It's an interesting look at how Kobe constructs the roster with a winning team, IMO. Love following along with the roster construction. And I think that's it. I think if you look at this and you say, okay, they need this specific thing, and you look at this and say, like, this is the guy that fits it, like, I think that makes sense. And this is a guy that I think you can look at and say, you know what, like, maybe the upside isn't there. Maybe we're going to really have to have Garland and Mobley as he grows and other people really cover for his potential limitations as a creator and a guy with the ball in his hands. But, like, I just keep the more we look at this and you look at his shooting numbers and believing they're real and things, it's like he does something that I don't know if the Cavs have another wing that he does have that I don't necessarily think another Cavs wing can do, right? Like, this isn't what Okoro does.
Okoro cannot shoot out of the gates like Agbaji can. Yeah. Like, Okoro was broken coming out of Auburn. Agbaji is not broken, but there's, like, a little bit of a limited ceiling compared to Okoro just in certain things.
But then you go further through this, it's like, it's not, this isn't like Jetty Osman, who they clearly don't trust. This isn't what LeVert does. This isn't what Windler does. This is just like clearly like, well, we just need a wing that we, right. But it's just like, I think you look at this and say, this is a wing we clearly feel like fits something we need, and I think that makes a ton of sense. I think like this is a very easily justifiable, understandable pick. Again, it's not fun. I think people are probably having more fun right now saying like, oh man, AJ Griffin is our version of Michael Porter Jr. or like, you know, Malachi Branham's this local kid with tons of upside. And like, I can understand that. Or even Dalen Terry or if Jaden Williams from Santa Clara would have been there. But like, this pick makes sense.
And it, for the Cavs are a team that was on pace to win 50-ish games before injuries and COVID and everything else hit them. And also a team that was also two cracks away from making the playoffs as either the seventh seed or the eighth seed. This is a guy who could maybe move the needle a little bit and help you maybe get to those spots because he's also a pretty good point of attack defender too. So Agbaji, people are asking like, do I hate it? Do I dislike it? I like this pick. I'm in it's perfectly fine. Like it's nothing like super sexy, but like it's a perfectly fine pick and you can't be too upset about it because this is a team that could have made the playoffs and also not be picking at all.
As we wrap up here, someone that we've talked about on this podcast is a potential Cavs trade target. De'Anthony Melton is going to Philadelphia. There's a lot of stuff going on right now.
One more thing. Back in later. Friend of this program, Mac Robinson, did text me saying that's a selfie from LeBron's first game back in Cleveland 2014, so don't judge.
Matt was like
6 years old then, so it's all good.
Who let him have a cell phone at 6 years old? Unbelievable. All right, we're going to be back on Friday morning, full episode, so you'll hear this will be in there. We'll react to the other picks the Cavs made. The other maybe trades that they make, you know, some of the guys we thought they might trade up for, guys they might try to go get in terms of, you know, maybe trading for De'Anthony Melton, trading up for Dalen Terry. Those guys are gone, but there's, to me, Evan, we'll see if I'm going to put this out there into the ether to just give us something to talk about as we come back. Them getting that other second round pick from the Kings felt like a precursor to do something. And maybe I am wrong. Maybe they will actually draft three players in the second round. But, we'll see where that goes. It feels like there's something else to be done here. But we will see where that goes when we come back for the second half of the show. Any final thoughts as we wrap up?
No, not necessarily. President of basketball, Kobe Altman, is now talking about the pick. So hopefully we can glean some insight on that as well. But I'm not too upset at the end of the day. Like, this is a solid pick for Cleveland. I think people will probably nitpick it and probably be disappointed. I think just the problem with the draft, there's guys you fall in love with. But overall, from a team building concept, this makes a lot of sense for JB, and this also makes sense for the Cavs in general.
Yes. All right, everyone, tune in Friday morning. This has been Locked On Cavs Live. Cavs take Ochai Agbaji. Thanks again for tuning in. All right, we're coming back. Thanks again for tuning into our live segment. Before we get into the rest of breaking down the draft, including talking about the Cavs drafting Evan Mobley's brother, Evan is going to tell us about our friends at Arcade 1-Up.
You're absolutely correct, Chris. Boom shakalaka, and we have big news. No, I don't mean Cleveland's second round. The one, the only NBA Jam is back. Arcade 1-Up is the leader in at-home retro arcade games, and it is not only bringing the best game ever back. They made it bigger than ever, and with a wait for it, not a Diop, Khalifa Diop edition, but a Shaq edition machine. People are obsessed with NBA Jam, and I'm thrilled to tell our listeners that you can once again play hoops with NBA legends in this arcade classic. Jump clear across the court and set the ball on fire in one of the first sports games ever to feature real and digitized NBA licensed teams. No fouls, no free throws, and no quarters required. Compete with friends and family through all new Wi-Fi leaderboards, making you more connected than ever before. Pre-order now from arcade1up.com. That's arcade, the number one, up.com for an estimated early September ship date. If you didn't know, by the way, Arcade 1-Up is the place for fun. They've got more classics like Golden Tee, Mortal Kombat, and others just starting at $399. And check this out. They're also giving away an NBA Jam Shaq edition to a Locked On Cavs listener. Enter for a chance to win a game console for your main cave at arcade1up.com/lockedon. That's arcade, the number one, up.com/lockedon. You have until July 8th to enter to win the NBA Jam Shaq edition console. Don't miss out. Enter today. Who are you going to play with?
All right, so Evan, as we're looking at this draft, we did our live reaction to Ochai Agbaji, who's the headliner of this draft.
We went from steady Eddie to very underwhelmed, and yeah. Since then.
So the Cavs, I think, overall in this draft, we're gonna find out who they're taking. I'm gonna be fully transparent about this. We're recording as we're waiting to find out who
as
the last...
they're on the clock.
Yeah, for at 56 overall. So we'll react to that in real time. I don't think that pick is really going to change how I feel about this. So they go Khalifa Diop, who's a 20-year-old Senegalese center who's playing in Spain with their first second-round pick at 39. This is with notably guys like Ryan Rollins from Toledo and Ohio State, DJ Liddell on the board. Then with their next pick, which is the pick they got from the Kings today by trading their stashed away Euro guy who's never going to play in the league, they take Isaiah Mobley from USC. Evan, I just look at the second round, and I'm just very underwhelmed. I understand like the Isaiah Mobley pick, I think even more than the Diop pick, just because like I think there's something there. Diop kind of feels like maybe like there's something there, but he's playing on the B team with his league in Spain. Had some good moments against the U19s, against Team USA last year, in against like Chet Holmgren and those guys. But like, I don't know if that guy's gonna like ever really come to the league. This just feels like they didn't do anything aggressively. Look, the second round is a very low, you know, hit rate. It's not going to be something you're going to crush, but like the bar is set very low here, and like that is a very underwhelming. I think the draft we come away feeling just kind of like, eh. If you're Cleveland, to look at their overall body of work, but the second round really just kind of not making a ton of sense to me.
They took a wing from the Cockburn Cougars, Luke Travers. He currently plays for the Perth Wildcats. My apologies, but I doubt he'll ever play for the Cavs, but he's a 6'7 wing from Australia.
So what is the point? Like, what is the point here?
I mean, at 56, technically 59, if you include the forfeited picks just in terms of draft order, like, I don't think you expect that player to come. I think Luke Travers is going to play and stay in Australia. He's carved out a career there, but it's a silly draft for sure. Like, you and I talked about it in the first segment. I think our energy's come down quite a bit just watching this unfold. The Ochai Agbaji pick, like, I'm totally okay with it. Like, I think it makes some more sense. I've kind of broke it down. I digested it and processed it a little bit. Like, he is a player who JB Bickerstaff can utilize creatively defensively. And if his three-point shot is real and it translates to the NBA easily, like, that could help unlock a lot of things for the Cavs just in terms of spacing and so many other things as well, just because if you're playing not Isaac Okoro as like a defensive point of attack defender, like, you don't have a liability on offense then. But the Diop pick was very, very, very underwhelming, I'd say, just because Ryan Rollins was on the board. That's a guy from Toledo that I really like, just overall, and he ended up going to Golden State a couple picks after that. But you and I are talking about this a lot. I've talked to people who cover the draft a lot more extensively than you and I do, and they're like, 39 is a real pick. It's a real opportunity for the Cavs to take a player and stash them with the Charge or stash them with the G League with some money and contracts come off their books, so then they can possibly develop like a good but possibly great rotation piece. So like Dean Wade, Lamar Stevens are kind of like our case studies that I reference a lot. Like, they're good but not great like rotation pieces, but they're familiar with like. So yeah, it's a little disappointing, I think I'd say. I think if the Cavs properly, we're advocates of this on this show, where the Cavs can kind of just grab a player in the second round, stash them with a Charge. You brought them up to Cleveland from Canton for a reason, to kind of have them in your backyard. They practice at your facility. They practice before their kind of bodies during camp and other aspects too. Like, utilize this program you have in front of you, because you do have some success stories like Dean Wade and Lamar Stevens with the Cavs, obviously, and then you have like Kyle Guy, who had a brief stint with the Miami Heat. And like, the Charge really do know how to develop some players and at least turn them into serviceable NBA players. So like, if you need to lean on them for 10-15 minutes a night, like, they're not going to look completely overwhelmed and overtaken by the moment. But I guess the Diop pick, like, if you're thinking about upside and like, hey, this could be our backup center 3-4 years down the line, maybe, or maybe it's just an attractive trade piece for the Cavs if he like just blossoms into his potential, because physically Khalifa Diop is an absolute unit. Like, he is sturdier than a brick outhouse, so like, there's potential there, and it's just definitely interesting. But like, the Isaiah Mobley pick, I think
I just look at this, and I want to be just like very blunt about this, because I think this deserves just some bluntness. I just don't understand. I can understand like stashing guys and playing that game. this just feels like you might not, like, you're aiming so low on, like, any of this working out, right? Like, even if you, like, Ryan Rollins, you didn't, like, love, there's, like, a template for that guy. Travers is, like, apparently very raw. He's had, like, a come up last season at Perth by some of the Aussie people, like, I follow on Twitter, flipping through this real quick. I'm going to have to do a deep dive in him because I don't know if I knew his name until 5 minutes ago. Like, this is not, this just doesn't feel like, I don't, Evan, I just look at this and you can, they can spin it how they want. They can say what they want. This just does not feel like we're looking at a team that took the second round with like, no, it feels like they're just like, you know what? We're going to like not worry about them. We're going to like kind of like not spend money in the second round here. It's just like, we're going to use these picks. Job's definitely not coming over. Travers probably isn't coming over. Mobley, you maybe get on a two-way. You're not spending money here. And I understand you have a roster crunch, but you got to spend money to make money with some of this stuff. And this just feels like such a not ambitious second round when, like, I'm not saying there's, like, slam dunk picks here. There was room for to shoot higher with some of these picks, I think.
And develop some players for long-term stuff because you have to think about not just this upcoming season.
You took two centers in the second round. Two.
Running it, too. I think the biggest mistake the Cavs could make is resting on their laurels of last season running this back. And we can talk about this more in the next segment. We can break this down all offseason long. But that is kind of my fear heading into this draft. Like, the Agbaji pick, again, makes sense. And they're also a little landlocked roster-wise and financially, so, like, you have to be creative with this. But there are avenues and ways to navigate this, of course, but not utilizing the second round properly is a little disheartening, especially considering it was reported by Chris Fedor and that the Cavs are trying to trade back into the first round. Like, I wonder what they would have done with that then, because then, like, that's a player on a guaranteed contract. Like, you're not going to sign that guy to a two-way deal. Like, realistically, they're not going to do that. So it's just, it's a little underwhelming. And I can talk about the positives, Isaiah Mobley, but, like, it's tough. And I'm sorry this is such a downer of a podcast for everyone, but, like, this is just, it was a goofy draft for Cleveland. And, like, I'm just, my head's spinning at just, like, what transpired in the second round.
Yeah, so I think after this, we should, let's do it. I think because I do, like, I don't feel like we have a ton to say about Giap. Like, I think his frame is really interesting. I don't know if that guy's, like, I don't think he's coming over, and if he does, that's going to be, like, competing with Moses Brown or on a two-way, right? Like, Isaiah Mobley feels like Luke competing Travers with Moses like Brown.
Stranger Things.
Go ahead. Or, like, Isaiah Mobley is going to be, like, in the G League with the Canton Charge, like, developing there. Travers, like, we'll have to kind of see what that plan is and see, like, if he comes over, does he be a G League guy? Like, these don't feel like guys you're going to necessarily roster and expect to help you this year. So, like, I think what we need to do here is after the break, let's just, like, look at the roster as it exists now. And, like, because there's a big thing still to come with the summer with Cleveland in terms of Colin Sexton, and that's going to shape the summer. This just feels like there's no advancement here. I think it's worth on kind of restocking and re-looking at the roster here. But first, I'm going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for your sports betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest developments, league reviews, news, and more, including this year's NHL playoffs and the latest in Major League Baseball and MMA and all that. BetOnline is your continued source for your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. And BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news of the season. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in and all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. Odds available right now include the Warriors as title favorites next season at plus 500, the Celtics and Clippers next at plus 700, and the Cavs at plus 7,500. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. That's BetOnline, where the game starts. Check them out at BetOnline.net. All right, so let's look at the roster here as we understand it post-draft. Okay, I think this is an exercise we will do quickly, and then just I'm not saying I expected the roster to change here. It just feels like it is very static right now, and there's more work to be done. But as we're looking at it right now, it feels like there's more work to be done. You obviously have Darius Garland, you have Evan Mobley, you have Jared Allen, you have Caris LeVert, you have Lauri Markkanen, you have Isaac Okoro, you have Ochai Agbaji. That's seven guys. Lamar Stevens is eight. Dean Wade is nine. Dylan Windler is 10. Jetty Osman is 11. Kevin Love is 12. So you have those three, I believe, three roster spots, unless I'm forgetting somebody. And then you have these three rookies. You have your MLE. Colin Sexton, obviously, would be another one of those three if he re-signs. I don't know what to make of this roster. I don't know. I don't feel like this draft is Agbaji makes sense, and I think he will fit and probably just have a nice solid career, and that's I think that pick is reasonable at 14. Mm-hmm. I just don't. This draft doesn't feel like they have these picks in the second round. Maybe they will. Maybe I'll be wrong. Right? I'm happy to be proven wrong. It doesn't in real time. It doesn't feel like these picks have a vision for where the roster might be going and what they need. You look at Memphis, they're just drafting replacements for guys, and guys know they're going to lose. Golden State is taking Rollins and taking Patrick Baldwin and doing these deep developmental picks. The Cavs are just mm-hmm. passing on those things. They could have had them, and they're passing on them.
Yeah. So it is tough just because the Patrick Baldwin thing is he was a first round pick. So I don't know.
Sure, but it's they get Rollins, but it's they're using their picks then. It's Rollins in the second round.
Rollins ones make sense. They could sign him to a two-way deal. They could not sign him at all and sign him to the Santa Cruz Warriors and just let him gel down there. And then they sign him to an actual contract if he clicks. And I feel optimistic in saying Ryan Rollins will be pretty good, but he'll be a good guard / shot creator at the next level in the NBA. But it's just, it's frustrating, man. You listed out the roster that the Cavs currently have. They have 12 players under contract. They, like you said, if they bring back Colin Sexton, that's 13. And then you obviously maybe want to bring in a backup point guard at that point. So whether that's Tyus Jones, Ricky Rubio, Raul Neto, if you really just want to go with the cheap option with Neto, there are avenues for the Cavs to pursue. And yes, they somewhat addressed the need on the perimeter by drafting Agbaji. But there's still a pretty dire need on the perimeter if you're the Cavs they have work to do. They don't have a ton of shooting. They have Darius Garland. They have Lauri Markkanen. They have Kevin Love. They have what you hope Agbaji's going to be. Other than that, you don't have much shooting, and you need spacing in order to play Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, unless Evan Mobley somehow becomes a knockdown three-point shooter in his sophomore season, which I have my doubts of doing. And Jetty Osmond's too inconsistent just defensively and offensively to consistently get minutes in this rotation. And the idea of Dylan Windler is there, but I think he's a trade piece more than this point.
Yeah.
So I'm more interested. And then I guess there's Dean Wade as well, but we need to see what Dean Wade looks like post-meniscus recovery and everything too. And then also if he can even get minutes in this rotation, with just how crowded things are for the Cavs right now. They are, I'd say they're landlocked financially and roster-wise. There's a bit of a crunch. And I think you need to consolidate some of these assets. They traded the draft rights to get that pick from Sacramento along with cash considerations to draft Isaiah Mobley. You need to maybe be a little bit more bold with some of your transactions.
This is just
Free agency. This episode drops on Friday. Free agency starts a week from today. And
God. Free agencies and summer leagues in 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's nuts. So the Cavs are in an interesting spot. The Colin Sexton domino will be the first one to drop, and then you kind of figure it out from there, because how much they pay Sexton, whether some avenues did open up for them. Detroit probably won't pursue Sexton because they took Jaden Ivey, and the Pistons had a stellar draft. I'm fascinated to see what they do next. And then I think it just muddies the water a little bit on teams who can possibly pursue Colin Sexton. So maybe, you get him on a more cost-controlled deal or a deal that's more favorable for you, so you have that full $10.3 million mid-level exception because you're a non-taxpayer team. Fine line you have to walk now, because how much you pay Colin Sexton kind of dictates how much money you can throw at another free agent to get an actual backup point guard to play behind Darius Garland. Because, you throw as much money as you can at Tyus Jones, but there could be a limit to how much money you could throw at him. And then, obviously, Ricky Rubio is your plan A, your plan B, whatever. But Rubio's probably going to command some decent money on the market, no matter what, ACL tear or not. He's going to make more than the vet min if he's signing with the Cavs. So, there's just, it's tricky, it's odd, it's murky, and I will hold my like true criticisms of Cleveland's offseason until we kind of see the next steps during free agency. If like the Cavs fall flat on their face, they don't make any trades or transactions, and they just try to like more or less run this back by adding Agbaji and then Isaiah Mobley on a two-way contract, I wouldn't say panic, but I would be concerned heading into next season.
Yeah, I think this just is like a pretty like first step as far as like actually improving the roster. This doesn't, again, I don't feel like there's a lot of ambition in this. I don't feel like there's a lot of like kind of stuff that's going to improve in this, right? Like I think there's some trickiness there. I honestly, Evan, think that the most important thing is what you see coming out of this draft is almost the Sexton market takes a different shape, right? Like the Pistons just do not scream a Colin Sexton suitor anymore, and they were one of the likeliest ones. I don't know what his market outside of Cleveland is going to exactly look like now. I mean, like, you know, even if the Spurs theoretically were interested, like they already had a lot of young guards and they took Blake Wesley and Malachi Branham in this draft. Like, do they want to go down that?
And Malachi Branham is in a very crowded rotation. Like,
yeah, there's just like not like this obvious thing now that kind of would lead you to figure out like where this is going to come from and how this will work out. And like, that's a tricky place for Cleveland to be too. But like, it just feels like the situation now is a little more, everything just feels like a little more muddled. And I'm not, I think like the Agbaji pick again makes a ton of sense. I think what we Kobe Altman spoke about that, and like his logic, I think makes sense. I think that pick is pretty boring, but like, I think it is a solid, understandable, like pretty, like direct pick. Everything else.
Kobe Altman was very transparent on the Agbaji pick. Like, the Cavs were too.
Well, as transparent as anyone is going to be in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But like, he was kind of clear in his vision where he said, Agbaji is one of the more NBA-ready prospects. The shooting is like the biggest upside for him. The defensive stuff is also really interesting too, just as a point of attack defender. But they believe in their, one, probably their player development system, and then two, the fact that Agbaji is a bit of a grinder and has made tangible jumps from freshman year, sophomore, junior to senior year with Kansas. And you don't want to put a cap on his potential. Like, obviously, like, he has a little bit of a way lower ceiling because he's the same age as Darius Garland entering his rookie season. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm interested. I'm watching the guys that didn't get drafted get signed. Like, I saw Keon Ellis signed with the Kings. Like, there's a lot of guys I'm watching like get nabbed up by other teams now, like through the UDFA process. That kind of makes you go, man, wish that was the Cavs. Like, it's just tough. Like, I'm fascinated to see what the next steps are, but I'm whelmed. I'll say that. Like, I'm feeling positive about the Agbaji pick, but like, everything else kind of took the wind out of Cleveland sales tonight.
Yeah, I think you can look at other organizations. I think like what the Grizzlies template, the Warriors template, like other teams.
The Grizzlies, the Pistons, the Warriors knocked this out of the park. Like, the Knicks had the worst draft overall, I'd say, but like the Cavs didn't do too great either.
Yeah, I think we need to see like where the Cavs are kind of going. Like the Colin Sexton thing was always going to be the crux of this summer. This draft is just very just like, I don't really know what was moved forward here. I think drafts are obviously very tricky, and we're never going to have a perfect understanding of what they are in real time.
Yeah,
I think this just feels especially just like, did this move forward in some way? Did this do anything of substance? And like, I it's just like, taking two centers in the second round when you have this big gaping hole in the wing, it's just like a very weird thing to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
like, what was, like, I just, like, what was the point of, like, what was the point of, there's just like a lot of things that I think don't totally click into place. And like, they can have explanations for them. We'll learn what this looks like in theory. This just kind of feels like you punted on the second round. And that's fine, but like, why did you do it? Like, are you actually invested in your G League team? Like, what is the extent you're invested in your G League team in that sense? Did you not want to, like, was this like to not have the salary on your books, frankly, with some of these picks? Like, is that part of this, right? Like, there are just like things about this that don't totally click into place for me that I just, it leaves you like a little whelmed as far as like, what is the stepping stone you're trying to use this draft for?
I think I'm whelmed, but if I had to give the Cavs a grade, I'd say DNC, just because it's a caveat of, we need to see what the rest of this offseason is to get the full picture of what Cleveland's actually planning. Because, like, the draft is not a good step in the right direction, but the Cavs could bounce. They're historically an aggressive team, and they could bounce, not bounce back, but they could find some silver lining through kind of what is just like a pretty dour draft right now. It's just underwhelming. Underwhelming is the word we keep using. I just think underwhelming is the best way to do it, especially when you like look at all these wing prospects that were available if you're Cleveland.
Yeah, and again, I think this is about, I think for me, when I think about this, this is about how are you trying to move this project forward.
Kenny Lofton Jr. signed with the Grizzlies. Dang.
Look, they got both of my thick kinks. This is just like...
I give them an F for that David Roddy acquisition. Just for giving up D'Anthony Melton to draft him is not good optics, in my opinion.
I mean, no. But, like, I mean, that's like a money thing. But that's also it's my...
for sure a financial thing. The Grizzlies are frugal. We could talk about this all day.
I mean, honestly, the Cavs might be kind of frugal. It's like, you could read that this way, I think. You could.
Yeah.
I think you
that's,
can.
That's the thing. I think you see the restraints of a small market team as well, where, like, they have to carefully navigate things, too.
I don't even know if it's like that. I just think sometimes you don't want to spend the money. I just think that's it. I think, like, there's TV revenue out the wazoo. The Gilberts are very rich. Sometimes you just don't want to spend the money, and I think that's fine. But I think sometimes you just don't want to spend the money. It's not always small market. It's just you don't want to spend the money.
But, I mean, Kevin Love's the team's highest-paid player next year, so.
Yeah, but that's, like, a weird anomaly. This is, like, a rabbit hole.
I'm saying, like, the way the Cavs' cap sheet is constructed is definitely odd of how much, like, financially they committed to their bigs. But, like, they made it work last season.
And then they took two bigs in the second round. Yeah. That's just, again,
And I have my reservations on them running it back. But I don't know. They can prove me wrong like they did last season, and I'll definitely eat crow on it, and I gladly will.
This could work out. Diop could be great. It's just, there's something about this just feels very wanting. Abaji's fine. I think that's a fun pick. Makes sense. The rest of it is very much just
he'll
like,
be a good rotation wing. Like, that's what
which, like, they need. It's just,
which
like...
Which is what they need, but they need more of that, too.
Yeah. Travers' frame is at least interesting, but, like, I don't know. We'll see where that goes. There's going to be a lot of YouTube watching and DMing our draft friends.
He's going to be traded
to
the
mustache.
Pacers. Yeah, he's got a mustache like me, but he's going to get traded to the Pacers, make a deal with the Mind Flayer, and ruin the entire summer for some kids in Hawkins.
Yeah, that actor is also Australian.
Crikey. But I think we can put a pin there.
Yeah, we'll be back on Monday. We'll talk about what Colt Mialma had to say. We'll talk about what Abaji's had to say. We're going to get some draft experts on. We'll get Richard Stamen back on the pod to talk about this draft next week. He can explain this to us. I did a hit with him after the draft for the Lockdown Live stuff. He seemed to like the Abaji pick. But does he like the other stuff? We're going to find out. Everyone, have a good weekend. Be well. And, this was interesting.